This episode gets a little racy, so you might want to cover little Johnny's ears.
That's so weird because it looks like there's some swearing in this episode too.
It's May 29th, 1990 in Toronto, Canada. The Sky Dome Arena is sold out. 30,000 fans have come to see Madonna's Blonde Ambition tour. Her manager, Freddie DeMann, is casually dressed in a bomber jacket and jeans, but he's feeling anything but calm and collected. Freddie's job is making sure everything runs smoothly on this tour and that Madonna's happy. That means her dressing rooms are painted white. There are always 4 boxes of hot tamales and a cup of mint tea waiting for her. She requires a crate of Evian water at room temperature. Never cold.
Okay, what is her deal with Evian?
Truly couldn't tell you. There are also rumors that she demands a brand new toilet seat at every venue. But lately, Freddie's job has been a lot more stressful than making sure that Madonna never sits on a used porcelain throne. Today, he's got to make sure his biggest client doesn't get arrested.
Oh no, what did Madonna do now?
Well, it depends on who you ask. Some people who saw the show last night weren't big fans of Madonna's performance of Like a Virgin. They called it an immoral live performance and filed a complaint. And now the Canadian police are giving Madonna an ultimatum. Clean up your act or else. And Freddie's worried. If she gets thrown into jail, they'll have to cancel their next performance. And canceling means losing millions of dollars. So Freddie's doing everything he can to make sure that doesn't happen. He steps backstage and whispers a quick Hail Mary. He's gonna see if he can get Madonna to just maybe compromise so they don't have to leave Canada in handcuffs. When he gets to her dressing room, Madonna turns her head toward him and her fake platinum blonde ponytail swings behind her. She's already in full makeup and wearing a skin-tight gold corset with a conical-shaped bra designed by Jean-Paul Gaultier. And she's raring to get on stage. Freddie begs her to give him 5 more minutes to see if he can straighten this mess out. Madonna laughs. What's to straighten out? No way is she altering a single dance move. Madonna is all about freedom of speech and artistic expression. Her show isn't just about titillation. She's trying to break taboos. And she's not going to stop now. Not when she's got a job to do. Madonna gives Freddie one last look, then breezes by him and takes the stage. The crowd goes wild, but Freddie, he's sweating bullets. If Madonna really does defy the authorities, he'll have his work cut out for him. The lights on stage dim, and the opening chords of Like a Virgin begin to play. This is the moment of truth. Freddie's shirt sticks to his chest as he watches the monitors backstage. Madonna kneels on a giant bed covered in burgundy sheets. As the music builds, she slowly and sensually caresses her body. She's flanked by 2 male dancers wearing long, conical bras that almost seem phallic. They touch themselves as she humps the bed, and then they join her in bed and start licking her costume. Freddie is frantic. Madonna isn't just doing her regular number. She's making it even more graphic, just to piss off the police. But the crowd loves it. When Madonna slips her hand between her legs, everyone goes wild. Then, as the song climaxes, so does she. Later in the show, Madonna makes her position even clearer. She's not backing down, and she wants the cops to know it.
Do you think that I'm a bad girl? Do you think that I deserve to be arrested? I hope so.
Oh no, so what happens? Does she get arrested?
No. After the show is over, the Canadian police back off. After her little speech on stage, arresting her would just look like retaliation. So she wins this standoff. Freddie avoids a heart attack. And of course, she gets an absurd amount of press over the fiasco anyway. Freddie's got to admit it. Once again, Madonna was right. She's the queen of controversy for a reason. She knows how to dance right on the line without ever crossing it. He just has to hope that one day, she doesn't lose her footing. From Wondery, I'm Arisha Skidmore-Williams.
And I'm Brooke Ziffrin.
And this is Even the Rich. In our last episode, Madonna married and divorced Sean Penn. She rocketed to superstardom after humping the floor in a wedding gown at the VMAs. And she stirred up a whole lot of controversy with her music video for Like a Prayer, including losing her mega deal with Pepsi. But all the media coverage made it more than worth it. Now, Madonna's determined to keep chipping away at society's taboos. But society might not be ready for her. This is episode 3, Borderline. That's the champagne. It's 1990, and the Blonde Ambition tour that Freddie was so worried about, it's selling out. City after city and stadium after stadium. The buzz around its controversial themes has made this show a must-see. The tour rakes in $62.7 million. That's almost $125 million in 2021 dollars.
Yeah, everyone wants to get their eyes on that little masturbation number.
Seriously. Madonna knows she's on the right track. Shocking people is paying off big. But now she's got to up her game. She's got to deliver something even more scandalous. Luckily, she's been plotting her next move during the tour. And this one is a real game changer. It's summer 1990 in Europe. Madonna is sitting outside and enjoying lunch with her dancers. It's a much-needed day off from the rigorous tour schedule. She's wearing a long white sleeveless blouse over capri pants, and her hair is tousled like she just went for a swim. She's relaxed and fanning herself. But she's looking to stir up some trouble. She turns toward one of her male dancers and asks, truth or dare?
Wow, I haven't played that game since like seventh grade.
And I'm guessing that version was way milder.
Wrong.
When the dancer chooses dare, she tells him, okay, unzip your pants and take your dick out right now.
Whoa, somebody call HR stat.
Yeah, this would never fly today. But this was the 90s. Madonna's dancer obliges with a quick little zip down and zip up. She and the rest of the group are titillated. They're practically giddy with excitement. All but one, that is. Another dancer, Oliver, looks super uncomfortable, like his skin is crawling. Out of the corner of her eye, Madonna watches him squirm, and she realizes she's struck gold with this game. Watching Oliver so rattled makes her imagine just how uncomfortable the world's gonna be when they see it. Because Madonna's not just having fun with her crew. She's also making a movie called Truth or Dare.
Of course she is.
Madonna enlisted filmmaker Alec Kashishian to film the Blonde Ambition Tour. It's a raw, voyeuristic view of what it's like to be on the road. She gives the director a total access pass to her life. And Madonna doesn't hold back. When it's her turn to play the game, she doesn't flinch when dared to give fellatio to a glass bottle. Eyes closed, she slowly inserts the neck of the bottle into her mouth and pushes it deeper and deeper. Her dancers laugh and cheer. She doesn't even gag. Later, when she chooses truth, she's asked who the biggest love of her life has been. She doesn't even have to think before she answers, Sean.
Aw, even after everything they went through?
I know, it's kind of heartbreaking. And also kind of weird, because during the filming of Truth or Dare, she's dating actor Warren Beatty. He directed her in the film Dick Tracy right after she'd broken up with Sean Penn. But her relationship with Warren doesn't seem long for this world. Every time he appears on camera, he looks absolutely miserable. He's very old school Hollywood. Cameras belong on the soundstage, not in hotel rooms. But here they are, following him and his girlfriend around. In one scene, he complains that Madonna doesn't want to be seen off camera, much less talk. He looks at his girlfriend and adds, what would you say if it's off camera? What point is there in existing?
Yeah, they're not soulmates.
Nope. He doesn't get her or what she's doing at all. This documentary isn't just about getting people to look at her. I mean, that's definitely part of it. But it's also about getting viewers to look at all the people who are on tour with her, especially her dancers. Remember that Truth or Dare game where Madonna says hello to a glass bottle?
Mm-hmm.
That's not the only tongue we see in that scene. Two dancers accept a dare to kiss each other, and they are enthusiastic. The others heckle them and cheer loudly as they make out. Let's just say it gets pretty steamy.
We They want this.
Woo, grab that hand.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it sounds tame now, but at the time, it was shocking. To give you some perspective, the very first same-sex kiss airs on American primetime just 2 months before the release of Truth or Dare. L.A. Law shows two women locking lips, and it does not go over well. Advertisers immediately jump ship. It's another 9 years before two men share a passionate kiss, this time on Dawson's Creek.
Ugh, paving the way for my favorite creek, Shits.
Oh, hell yeah. But Madonna doesn't care what focus groups or advertisers will think about her film. She's not afraid to put queer people front and center. And that makes Truth or Dare groundbreaking. According to Queerty, a leading newspaper for queer news, the documentary changed a generation of gay people. It put gay desire, without any judgment, on the big screen. And when the film comes out in 1991, it doesn't just get played in art house theaters. It's a bona fide hit. It rakes in $29 million. And for 11 straight years, it holds the record for the highest grossing documentary of all time.
She's got the Midas touch.
Yeah, she does. With her track record, Madonna's starting to feel kind of invincible. She had a mission and she achieved it. Now she wants to see what other taboos she can bust. But let's be honest, nobody's really invincible, right? And as it turns out, you can have too much of a good thing. It's October 21st, 1992, and Madonna's new book is being loaded onto trucks. It's about to hit the shelves of bookstores around the world.
Okay, when did she find time to write a book?
Well, it's an art book with short essays and pictures. And get this, it comes encased in a Mylar wrapper that you have to rip open. The wrapping represents the outer casing of a condom, and the book inside is called Sex.
Oh, such a wordsmith.
In the intro to the book, Madonna says that everything you are about to see and read is a fantasy, a dream, pretend. And her fantasies / dreams / pretend are a lot more graphic and explicit than any of mine. Let me paint you a picture. On one of the pages, a nude Madonna with only a purse and heels walks down a Florida highway while sticking her thumb out to hitch a ride.
Well, I mean, anything goes in Florida, so.
Valid point. But then on another page, there's Madonna in the buff again. This time, she's at a pizza joint, just casually eating a slice at the counter as customers stare at her.
I mean, maybe they're just wondering where she falls in the pineapple on pizza debate.
They don't belong together. But yeah, that's totally what they're thinking, obviously. It does get a lot more risque. So be prepared.
You know, I'm suddenly happy that we have that content warning at the beginning of this episode.
Me too. There's one of Madonna bound to a chair with ropes. She's wearing a black leather number with her breasts exposed. A topless woman sucks on her nipple and another topless woman kisses Madonna while holding a switchblade up to her throat.
Whoa, okay. She's going there.
Yeah. There's a lot more like this one. She includes photos of threesomes, ones where she wears a dog collar, plays with whips, and explores bondage. And to reinforce the fantasy part of the book, Madonna creates an alter ego for her S&M stories named Mistress Dita. Mistress Dita writes, I love my pussy. It is the complete summation of my life. My pussy is the temple of learning.
Man, I wish I had that kind of relationship with my vagina.
Yeah, it is inspiring. When Sex hits the shelves, it sells out fast. It reaches the top of the New York Times bestseller list and becomes the fastest selling coffee table book in history.
I mean, nothing goes better with coffee than sex.
I wouldn't know. I don't drink coffee.
Yeah, me either.
For Madonna, the money's great, but it's about more than that. Madonna says she published Sex to liberate America, free us all of our hangups. She told Spin, we live in a very repressed society and I deal with erotic themes. The point I try to make is, why should we feel ashamed of our sexuality? But the book's message lands with a thud. To readers on the left, the book doesn't go far enough. The New York Times writes that Madonna comes off like a CEO instead of a sex goddess. Her book is a cliched catalog of what the middle class is supposed to consider shocking. And on the right, people think Madonna's profiting from what they consider to be images of abuse, rape, and degradation. She's done what almost nobody in America has ever been able to do. Unite feminists, liberals, and the Christian right against her. She's receiving almost 200 letters a day at this point, and all of it is hate mail.
Oh, okay. So they're like big mad.
Yeah. For the first time, the controversy Madonna drums up is super damaging to her career and to her ego. But Madonna doesn't lose. She's going to keep pushing the envelope no matter what her critics say. But if she doesn't let up soon, she might just go down swinging.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank?
Literally always.
Okay, well, the new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look, and it comes in luxe gold packaging. It feels incredibly high-end, but it is a lot more affordable.
Oh yeah, the Panorama Mascara lives up to its name by giving your lashes panoramic volume and a fully fanned-out look. Its tapered mascara wand catches every single lash, including those hard-to-reach corner lashes. When I do wear makeup, I do the bare minimum, and that's usually eyeliner and mascara and lip gloss. Yeah. And so mascara has to really pop.
Yes.
And let me tell you, L'Oreal, this baby pops.
Yeah. I do love the packaging. Like, I'm all about that.
So if you're looking for an affordable mascara that gives you voluminous, lengthened lashes, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
So as a listener of Even the Rich, you know that audio piques the imagination, which is why we're so excited for Audible's new collection of exclusive thrillers. They feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances that really bring the story to life.
Oh, yeah. The next listen on my list is the psychological thriller, The Silent Patient.
Ooh.
So it's all about a therapist who tries to unravel the mystery of a woman who refuses to talk or give any explanation as to why she shot her husband. I mean, it's going to be the perfect binge listen. And you know, I love my thrillers.
I can agree. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog.
Yeah. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/eventherich or text Even the Rich to 500-500.
That's audible.com/eventherich or text Even the Rich to 500-500 to get started.
Madonna's sure that the only way out is through. If she can get people to understand why sexuality is important to her art, she knows they'll get on board. So she pushes forward with the release of her next album, Erotica. Like the book, Erotica is heavy on the sexual themes and also features her alter ego, Mistress Dita. But putting the album out right after the book is a complete disaster. She totally oversaturates the market with sex, and even her fans are over it.
Never thought I'd see the day when people were tired of sex.
Yeah. The album sells 5 million copies worldwide. By Madonna's standards, it's a bomb. True Blue sold 21 million.
Okay, so I'm guessing Madonna pivots, like maybe stars in a quaint Disney movie.
Not our Madge. She just digs her heels in. And America's getting really, really tired of her shtick. But the final straw is her appearance on David Letterman.
Don't you want to show everybody the underwear?
Well, yeah, I think most everybody has seen underwear.
No, they haven't seen mine.
Oh, no, that's not true.
Okay, what is David Letterman doing with her underwear?
She gave it to him. The New York Post sums up how people are feeling. Brooke, please do the honors.
Oh, okay. Alas, it is what the world has now come to expect from Madonna. She has built a career, if you could call it that, around blasphemy, lewdness, profanity, and smut. It's a pathetic reach for celebrity and notoriety by a woman short on talent and wit. She has nothing to sell but shock. Sadly, since she cannot soar with the eagles, she forages with the rodents. Ouch.
Yeah. For the first time, Madonna feels like she's lost control of the narrative. She's gone too far. She's open to doing some damage control, but her team isn't so sure they can fix this. Her image just might be broken beyond repair. It's 1994, and Madonna's sitting on a brown paisley couch in a room with beige walls. Behind her is a brown wooden bureau and a tall brown vase.
Ugh, one of my favorite design schemes. Poop chic.
It's definitely not fancy or glamorous. It kind of feels like she's in her grandmother's living room. And I think that's the point. The focus is all on Madonna. She's wearing a plain white t-shirt, and her blonde hair is loosely pulled back. It's very girl next door. A little girl, around 4 years old, curls up in her lap. Madonna playfully giggles and snuggles her while looking directly into the camera.
It's a whole new me, right? Right? I'm going to be a good girl this year, I swear. Jesse's had a tremendous influence on me. Back to being innocent. Back to basics. Right, Jess?
Okay, that poor girl is being used as a prop.
Totally. It's not even her kid. Not a niece or a nephew. I think it's the daughter of one of her producers. Jesse is just there to show how warm, loving, and motherly Madonna is. Warner Records and her publicity team are trying to undo all the damage to her reputation with one promo video. But obviously, it's not enough. When Bedtime Stories gets released, it sells even worse than Erotica. With two failed albums back to back, Madonna's really starting to feel the heat. She knows she can't keep doing what she's doing, or her career will never recover. So it's time to do what she does best. She's gotta reinvent herself. It's December 1994, and Madonna's plotting her next move. But her options feel limited. Her acting career has never quite taken off, and her music career is at a standstill. But maybe her next move doesn't have to be one or the other. Maybe it can be both. When she hears that the movie Evita is ramping up production, she knows it's the answer to her prayers. If she gets the lead role as Eva Peron, she'll be singing, dancing, and acting. All of her talents will be on display. This is the role she was born to play. And it's not just that Evita will be a showcase for her talents. Madonna feels like Eva is a kindred spirit. They have so much in common.
Oh, do tell.
Well, they were both born with brown hair, but become known as iconic blondes. They both love fashion.
Okay, so the basic similarities most women share.
Okay, there's more though. They both escaped their bleak small town life and moved to the big city at young ages. Madonna to New York at 19 and Eva to Buenos Aires at 15. And they were both trying to become famous actors.
Okay, all right, now we're talking.
Yeah, and they also have very similar personalities. Both women are strong-willed and determined. It's why they both achieved so much in such short times. In 1946, by the time she was 27, Eva was the First Lady of Argentina. And she didn't just stand by her man. Eva worked right beside her husband, Juan Perón, campaigning and delivering powerful speeches. She even created the Female Peronist Party and lobbied for women's rights. And even though it didn't happen until after she died, Eva is credited with getting women the right to vote in Argentina because she's the one who got the conversation started. Madonna isn't a politician, obviously, but she's also spent her career pushing back against the idea of what a woman's place should be.
Okay, I'm sold. Maybe Madonna is onto something here.
Yeah, she knows she is. Except there's one little problem. Michelle Pfeiffer's already been cast as Eva. Madonna's crushed. She doesn't think she'll find a part this perfect again. But before the cameras start rolling, Michelle has a baby and decides to pull out of the movie. And Madonna's like, oh yeah, the stars have aligned. This part is mine.
Okay, that is some Brooke-level manifestation, if I do say so myself.
You are good at manifesting, I'll give you that. The only problem is the filmmakers aren't as excited as Madonna is. With her diva reputation and bad track record at the box office, they're not exactly jumping at the chance to have her play the lead in their $55 million film. But Madonna isn't having it. She's going to get this part, whatever it takes. So she sits down at her desk and pens a 4-page letter to director Alan Parker. In it, she explains why she's perfect for the part, saying that she's the only one who can understand Eva Peron's passion and pain. Madonna promises to sing, dance, and act her heart out, and to make this film her one and only priority. And when Parker reads the letter, he's genuinely moved. He can feel her sincerity and passion, and he wants that for his movie. So he casts her as Eva Peron, even though there are still a lot of people who aren't on board, including Andrew Lloyd Webber, the film's composer.
Oh, no biggie, just the guy who wrote the music for Phantom of the Opera, Cats, and the original Broadway version of Evita.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously Madonna's nervous. She feels like everyone is waiting for her to stumble and fail.
Yeah, no pressure.
So much pressure. In fact, she's so determined to prove them wrong that she signs up for vocal lessons for the first time. I mean, she's always taken performing seriously, but her music was never about technical perfection. It was about provoking strong emotions. This movie is going to require something more from her. So she goes back to being her usual straight-A student self and crams. She learns she's only been using half of her vocal potential and retrains to start singing from her diaphragm.
Okay, better late than never.
Yeah. Next on the list is dance lessons. She's got to learn the tango.
I mean, she's a trained dancer, so that should be easy.
Yeah, one would think she'd probably pick it up faster than, say, me. But to be fair, the tango's hard. Some people say it takes a few years just to become proficient. And Madonna's determined to do all her own dancing. And then after that is acting.
Probably third on her list of performance skills.
Yeah. But Madonna's going to do everything she can to knock it out of the park. She pretty much goes method and starts reliving Eva's life. She flies to Buenos Aires and meets with people who knew her. She visits every spot that Eva Perón may or may not have been to. And when she's done with that, she starts meeting with all the scholars who've written about her. She's really putting in the work. She wants to deliver the performance of a lifetime. She wants to show the people who doubt her that she deserves this part.
Yeah, suck it, Andrew Lloyd Webber.
But it's not just the filmmakers. Madonna's already won over the director. She's proven she's worth taking a risk for. But if she's going to make this film the best it can possibly be, she's going to have to win over an entire country, too.
When you find new ways to save, you can reach your financial goals more easily and still have the occasional treat.
Exactly. And Chime's here to help you do that. With a Chime checking account, you can make financial progress with features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe or getting paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit.
Yep. So if you set up direct deposit into your Chime account and use an activated debit card, Chime will spot you up to your limit when you exceed your balance.
And I love that Chime never charges fees or interest for using SpotMe. To date, Chime has spotted members over $20 billion.
Oh my God. Take more control of your finances and say goodbye to monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/rich. That's chime.com/rich.
Chime feels like progress.
Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Boosts are available to eligible Chime members enrolled in SpotMe and are subject to monthly limits. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
We all face stress in our daily lives. What if the answer to a better stress response is in one key nutrient? I'm talking about magnesium, and specifically Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. This one-of-a-kind product is designed to reverse low levels of magnesium, which could have a positive effect on our stress response. But don't take my word for it. Here's a quote from a 2020 issue of the scientific journal Nutrients. Results suggest that stress could increase magnesium loss, causing a deficiency. And in turn, magnesium deficiency could enhance the body's susceptibility to stress, resulting in a magnesium and stress vicious circle. I only recommend Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. It's the only organic full-spectrum magnesium supplement that includes 7 unique forms of magnesium for stress resilience and better sleep. Simply go to bioptimizers.com/ifstories, promo code ifstories10 to get your Magnesium Breakthrough and find out this month's gift with purchase. That's bioptimizers.com/ifstories, promo code ifstories10.
It's February 7th, 1996, in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Madonna's curled up into a tight little ball in the floor of a sedan. She's trying to stay hidden, but that means keeping her face pressed up against the peeling vinyl seats. They reek of old sweat and cigarette smoke.
Ooh, I hope they turn that into a cologne.
Gross. This car is obviously a far cry from the luxurious Mercedes and Bentleys she's used to. But if riding on the floor of a crappy car is what she has to do to make this film happen, then it's a small sacrifice. As she peeks out the window, she sees graffiti whizzing by, and she keeps catching her name. Goodbye, Madonna. Evita lives. Get out, Madonna. Since her casting was announced, all of Argentina has turned against her. members of the Peronist political party don't want Madonna portraying their beloved Evita. She's memorialized in Argentina as a saint. And to them, Madonna is as unsaintly as it gets. And President Carlos Menem, a Peronist, has been calling the film an outrage. He says Madonna is the embodiment of vulgarity. Which is what brings us to this backseat operation. If Madonna is going to make her role as true to life as possible, she needs the president's approval. In the film's climactic scene, Madonna wants to sing "Don't Cry for Me, Argentina" from the same balcony where real-life Ava would stand and address her adoring public. No other spot will do. But the president has made filming on that balcony off-limits.
Ooh, sounds like he's not a fan.
Nope. In fact, this introduction was nearly impossible to arrange. President Menem kept refusing to meet with Madonna. Finally, after a long talk with a mutual friend, he caved, but only if they could keep the meeting top secret. Madonna's entire career hangs on this film, and she wants it to be perfect. So she'll do whatever it takes to get there, even if it means playing James Bond for a while. After the incognito car ride, the mission continues. Madonna hops on a helicopter and is whisked off to a private island.
Oh, I'm definitely picturing a villain petting a cat now.
Yeah, well, just like 007, Madonna has a secret weapon. She steps out of the helicopter looking like she's been transported back in time to the 1940s. She's wearing a black cardigan and a knee-length silk dress splashed in red, black, and white. Her T-strap pumps are black and white leather, and her hair is done up in a bun. When President Menem sees her, he's in awe. He tells her how much she looks like Eva Perón. Madonna pretends to be surprised, but this was her plan all along. Madonna didn't come all this way just to tell the president that he's wrong about her. She's here to show him how wrong he is. At first, they just make small talk. They sip chilled champagne, nibble on caviar and crackers, and steal glances at each other. But when the champagne looks like it's finally gone to the president's head, Madonna stands up and plays him a recording of the new song, You Must Love Me. Eva Perón is on her deathbed, singing about her love for her husband Juan. As President Menem listens, he begins to tear up. Madonna seizes the opportunity. She slinks back to her seat right across from him and looks deep into his eyes. "I want to make this movie," she says. He nods. He already knows that. But Madonna presses on. "It's all about intention, you know? And mine is a good one, I promise you." They look into each other's eyes for another long moment. And finally, President Menem leans in, taking her hand in his. He says, "Somehow, I think I believe you."
And that's how you get out of paying rent.
God, I wish. Though he doesn't give his blessing that night, Madonna leaves the secret rendezvous feeling pretty good. Less than 2 weeks later, the balcony at Casa Rosada is on the shoot schedule, and President Menem even holds a public meeting where he gives his blessing to the film. So after getting over some massive hurdles, Madonna's ready to roll cameras on an epic production. There's 299 scenes to shoot in 84 days across 3 different countries with 600 crew members. But Madonna's ready for whatever comes her way. After all, she convinced the president of Argentina to change his mind. Nothing could be harder than that, right? It's May 1996 in London. Madonna's in the final stretch of filming. She's in character as Evita, and she looks ravishing in her 1940s getup. Her hair is short and perfectly coiffed, with a subtle wave reminiscent of Vivian Leigh. She's wearing a red silk dress, and she's dancing across the floor in high heels. Madonna's been on her feet all day, and she's not feeling so great. Lately, she's been winded and dizzy because she's pregnant.
Whoa, left field.
Life comes at you fast. But Madonna's always dreamt of being a mother. It's something that's been on her mind a lot lately. In fact, she and her new boyfriend, aspiring actor Carlos León, have been discussing their future with kids. But she didn't expect to get pregnant now, during one of the most grueling jobs she's ever had. Madonna gets into hair and makeup at 6 a.m. every morning. She sits for 3 hours straight while stylists transform her into Evita. Her nails have to be manicured to perfection. She wears false teeth and painful brown contact lenses.
Ugh, okay, that sounds way harder than charming a president.
So much. She has to also dance, sing, and act. And shooting days are long. But Madonna doesn't want to slow production down any more than she already has. The directors moved some of the scenes around to accommodate her pregnancy. They filmed most of the dance numbers first, but there were some he just couldn't move, like the one she's shooting today. And Madonna is struggling. Everyone on set can tell. She agrees to lie down for a few minutes after every take, but that's it. She refuses to stop filming. Madonna's determined to get this scene done, and she won't let a body double stand in for her. So after a little rest, Madonna hops right back up, ready to tango. But as her dance partner swings her around, Madonna feels a sharp cramp in her stomach. It's like nothing she's ever felt before. She doubles over in pain. Suddenly, she's scared. She's given herself over, body and soul, to Evita. But now, she's not the only one dependent on her body anymore. A doctor rushes to set and looks for a fetal heartbeat. Time stands still. Madonna's scared shitless. And then, they hear it. Madonna is so relieved.
Ooh, same, I was holding my breath.
Yeah, she writes in her diary, which was later published in Vanity Fair, 2 weeks left of filming and the discomforts of being pregnant and the future demands of motherhood are becoming my sole preoccupation. I know I have every right to be distracted by these things, yet I feel guilty. I need to stay focused and hang on for 2 more weeks.
It's kind of like she's giving birth to 2 children at the same time.
Oh my gosh, well said. This film has definitely been a labor of love for her.
Yeah, she deserves a big push present just for Evita.
Oh, totally. And she's about to get it. When the reviews for Evita come in, the critics are mixed. Some love it and some hate it. But most agree on one thing. Madonna's acting is good.
Hallelujah.
I know, right? Finally. Critic Zach Connor says, Madonna once again confounds our expectations. She plays Evita with a poignant weariness and has more than just a bit of star quality. Love or hate Madonna Eva, she's a magnet for all eyes. And the film kills it at the box office. It ends up grossing $141 million. So Madonna goes into award season feeling positive. She's getting some awards buzz, and she thinks she's got an actual shot at some of those shiny trophies.
Ones that don't look like golden raspberries?
Exactly. Madonna's ecstatic when she gets nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Actress in a Musical or Comedy, and she actually wins. But when the Academy Awards announces their list of nominees, Madonna's not on it, and she's disappointed. She's not the only one who feels like she was overlooked. Headlines about Madonna being snubbed splash across the papers. Even recently, in 2018, Closer magazine does a ranking of the top 10 biggest Oscar snubs ever, and Madonna still makes the list at number 10. But even without the Oscar, Madonna's won a bigger prize. She's no longer box office poison. She wanted to be the best, so she gave it her all, and it paid off. She was the star of a successful big-budget film. And now Madonna is ready to throw everything she has into a brand new role. Motherhood. This is episode 3 of our 4-part series, The Making of Madonna. We use many sources when researching our stories, including Lucy O'Brien's Madonna Like an Icon, Andrew Morton's Madonna, and J. Randy Tarabarelli's Madonna, An Intimate Biography. I'm Arisha Skidmore-Williams.
And I'm Brooke Ziffrin. Allison Reimer wrote this episode. Editing by Alana Hope Levinson. Our producers are Natalie Shisha and Dave Schilling. Our associate producer is Kate Young. Our audio engineer is Sergio Enriquez. Sound design is by James Morgan. Our executive producers are Stephanie Jens, Jenny Lauer-Beckman, and Marsha Louie for Wondery.
What came first, the chicken or the egg? Spoiler alert, it's neither. At Happy Egg, we believe happiness of the hens is what actually came first, because without happy hens, there would be no such thing as happy eggs. You know, eggs with delicious orange yolks. Those come from hens who are raised the happy way on 8+ acres of family-owned farms. Choose happy at happyegg.com and look for the yellow carton at a store near you.
Happy
Egg.